From the Ruinous Media Network and KAOS 89.3 Olympia, I'm Mark Lee Morrison, and this is Low Profile. Today's guest is Bobby Hackney, founding member of the Detroit early 70s punk rock band Death. We're going to be talking about his upbringing, hanging out with Motown legends after church, seeing all the big Detroit rock stars when he was growing up, where he took his music after that with his brothers, and we're going to catch up with Death since the release of their documentary a little over a decade ago, A Band Called Death. But before we get into all that, I'm going to give a call to his son, Julian. Let's see if he's home.
Hello.
Hey, Julian.
What's going on, Markley?
What's good?
I'm in the middle of some brewing right now. I make ginger beer, so, you know, I'm taking a brew day today.
Nice. And, you make it spicy?
It's pretty spicy. It's smooth, you know. It's nice. It's balanced. But it's got a good kick to it, you know.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I love a good ginger beer. So this is the intro for an episode about the band Death. I'm on the phone with a dude named Julian Hackney. This is our first time speaking in almost 17 years. Do you mind telling the listener how we met? You want to recall it?
Wow, this was so long ago. I mean, my memory is definitely like a little on the blurry side, but
same.
I remember we were in Fort Worth, and me and my friend Nick were riding trains, and we were just kicking around town, and there was like this DIY space. It was like a theater, and like you guys were like having band practice or like about to like
we were about to I do don't know, you... we had a gig at some DIY space. We ran into each other in different places getting off of freight trains.
Like you were going one way and we were going another, or
and then all of a sudden it just seemed like the natural thing to do was start a band, make up a set.
Martin Luther King.
Yeah, with an A.
Yeah.
Which that was your the name on your fake ID. You remember that?
Yeah. But that was just like a.
It was like a drawing.
It was like a card. I think we got that at the library or something. Like a fake ID of Martin Luther King. It was Martin Luther King's picture, and it was like. It was just like a black and white, looked like a government issue, like something or other, you know, like a registration card or something. So yeah, that was my ID.
So your dad is one of the founding members of Death, and at this point, 17 years ago, did you even know about that yet?
No, this was years prior to us finding out. And, like, you know, the fact that we were all into punk and, like, into hardcore and, you know, like, me and my brothers, like, grew up in that music, you know, and, like, so the fact that this was just sitting right under our noses, like, pretty wild.
Yeah.
And, like, that they never told us about it, you know.
And now you're playing in the group, the reformed version.
Yeah, you know, we've put out a split release with Ruff Francis. Is my main band that I'm currently in.
We're going to hear more about Ruff Francis in a little bit. Before the show starts, though, we should play the Ruff Francis side of that single here. Give them a little taste of it.
Yeah, give them a taste.
That was Julian Hackney of the band Ruff Francis and now the band Death. Let's get into it. I'm talking with Bobby Hackney, vocalist and founding member of Death.
Well, I mean, the band Death is if anybody's out there seen the documentary A Band Called Death, I guess you really know the gist of what it is. We're a three-piece rock and roll band of brothers, blood brothers, you know, all born in Detroit and brought up in the 60s. And in the 60s, and we in the 70s, we decided to start a rock band. And we didn't really start off as a rock band at first, but, you know, in 1971, from 1971 to 73, we really dove into the rock sound, and we developed our own sound. And the name of the band, I mean, we needed a good rock and roll name. And our brother David, who was now deceased, he deceased in 2001, he was the leader of the band at the time, and he decided to name the band Death. And we recorded a lot of music. We wrote a lot of music. We did release a record, and radio stations loved the record, but they wouldn't play us simply because of our name. And it wasn't really, you know, I mean, it might have even been a semi-racial thing back then, but it really wasn't. It was really the name of the band. And we were told that explicitly by, you know, radio stations, DJs, concert promoters, club owners, our own family, everybody, know. It was the name, man. It was the name Death. And we released this record in Detroit, and we only released 500 of them. And things got really kind of down and out for us because we couldn't, you know, we couldn't get arrested in the name, with the name Death in Detroit. So by chance, we had a relative that lived in New England. We migrated to New England and Vermont. We tried the same thing in Vermont, and we got the same results as we did in Detroit. Oh, so wow. We decided to change the name, and you know, we went into a more of a spiritual gospel band. We called ourselves Fourth Movement. That was around 1980, and David decided to go back to Detroit, kind of re-spin the whole rock and roll thing, and he wanted to take us with him. But at the time, we were starting families, and we all couldn't do that. So we all thought David would come back here to Vermont, and he thought we would come back to Detroit, and it ended up being a 2-3 year standoff. Us being bass and drums, my brother Dennis and I, the only thing that was left, and really couldn't find a guitar player that could even hold the mustard to David. And so we just became a bass and drum band, and we became a reggae band. And for 20 years, 20 plus years, we became one of the most popular reggae bands in New England. And then in 2008, right around the time we were like getting a little bit up there with the reggae band as far as, well, okay, we've done this, you know, what do we do next? And maybe we could just, you know, retire. You know, our kids are growing up, and they are all musicians. We've passed it on to them. But 2008, lo and behold, the music industry and the world came calling about the old Death tracks from Detroit that we did, and that they were getting worldwide acclaim. So here we are, you know, all this time later. And, you know, between 2008 and I would say the pandemic, Death toured all over the world, Mexico, Amsterdam, Monterey, of course, Los Angeles, San Francisco, the Netherlands, Brazil, and still today we have worldwide fans, and it's still kind of a surreal dream to us, but you know what, it's just been a tremendous ride, and it's a wonderful thing. Hey, you know, we've been inducted into the Smithsonian, the African American Black History Museum. So, I mean, you know, all these things have transpired, and here we are, you know, on the cusp, still making this great rock and roll music. We got a chance to go into our whole archive, and we have a whole lot of songs that never got saw the light of day that the public is now getting us to actually hear.
Yeah. Hey, talk about a redemption story, huh?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think that's the whole synopsis, as best as I could put it, the best that I can, I know it, you know.
Beautiful work. Well, I mean, you lived it, so. I'm wondering if we could go back a little bit further. You and your brothers, David and Dennis, grew up playing music, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. We grew up kind of like, you know, that whole Detroit early 60s era where, I mean, most of the young kids on the east side of Detroit were connected with the church, and we all got our music through the church, you know, even the Motown artists, you know.
Right.
I
mean,
you either were in the choir or you did a solo or you did something, and we were no different. You know, our dad being a Baptist minister, so we was a, and the great thing about Baptist ministers at that time, you know, I mean, they had a real, it was kind of a weird, strange connection to music that all the Baptist ministers had with blues, and of course, blues led to rock and roll. So, right. I mean, we were always on the cusp of, you know, the blues artists like, you know, Chuck Berry, B.B. King, and Etta James, and Little Walter, and Muddy Waters, and them guys. And then the next thing, you know, I mean, with the whole Elvis era and everything, and then my dad kind of, you know, being right into us being in the center of Detroit, we got a chance to just be exposed to all this great music. I mean, it was, you know, I mean, even Aretha Franklin's dad, I mean, you know, a typical Sunday over at Reverend Franklin's house would be Sam Cooke, you know, and B.B. King, and, you know, all these great artists, you know, Mahalia Jackson. I mean, that would just be a typical dinner at his house, you know. So, I mean, even with Aretha and the whole Detroit scene, we were always exposed to all this great music. And the great thing about it was that because of blues, it was always the cross-cultural in that the only race that we felt was in the civil rights movement, in the attitude of some people. But in Detroit, you could be exposed to so many different music. We were exposed to so many different music until it almost made it a melting pot because besides Motown, there was Detroit rock and roll, which
right.
really started to take its shape around between 65 and 67. And, you know, my dad used to take us to the auto show. And guess who would be appearing at the auto show every year? That was his local gig, Bob Seger and the Last Third.
Oh, wow.
And we were the groups like the Rationals. And we were exposed to groups like, you know, and so that led into that great movement that was coming up between 67 and 68 during the Woodstock and the whole hippie movement. And Detroit just really, really caught on fire, man. Motown caught on fire. Rock and roll caught on fire. Mitch Ryder and the Detroit Wheels. And then the end of 68, MC5 introduced themselves. That led into Iggy Pop. You know, later on in 68, Iggy Pop put out this great song called 1969. It was kind of like the Detroit anthem of that year.
Totally.
So we were exposed to all of that. And then on top of that, the two artists that really influenced me, Dennis and David, greatly, the most out of all those artists was the explosion of Grand Funk Railroad and Alice Cooper when he migrated to Detroit from Arizona. You know, and then, of course, The Who at the Grandy Ballroom, the Rolling Stones. I mean, these bands embraced Detroit. And they always said that Detroit was their favorite places to play. They would always say that in their interviews, that, you know, they were always looking forward to coming to America to play Detroit. So we became Detroit. We became known as two names, you know, there was Motown and then there was Detroit Rock City.
Yeah.
So we kind of played with both worlds, but I tell you, Detroit Rock City is what took over me this day.
Yeah. Yeah. Detroit had a little bit of a monopoly for a minute there.
Yeah, it did. It really did.
Wow. Yeah, I was wondering if y'all saw groups like MC5 and the Stooges alongside, you know, all the Motown acts and everything. It's just crazy to think of all that happening in the same, I don't know about the same neighborhood, you know, right there in that cluster.
It wasn't the same neighborhood, but the great thing about it was is that when I think of it now, you know, the inner city of Detroit, where we lived on the east side, was really right between Grosse Pointe and right between downtown. So, I mean, all the rockers, I mean, we had to get to the shows, we all had to meet kind of at the same place. And we all had to come down the same avenue, which would be the Jefferson or Woodward or Gratiot. It just made it a good time to be in the city at that time because it would get really exposed to so much culture. So, you know, I mean, it was just great. That's what made it really great to be a part of that. It's a skin, it's a
dream. It's that time to bleed. While all these lights popping up in my face. Or am I freaking out?
So I did a little bit more research into your other projects, and I was curious about the Rockfire Funk Express. Is that the initial, like, you guys making a record and getting yourselves out there?
That was the very first real band that we had formed with a name. I mean, we had been playing a couple of years before that, but we were just like kind of a garagey sound band. We did, you know, we were just tinkering around in the garage, attracting the neighbors and whoever else would stop on Burner Avenue. That was our first group. And we went into the studio, we went into United Sounds, we had a manager, and we knew what United Sounds was. I mean, if you was in Detroit, you knew that United Sounds was the recording studio where Berry Gordy did all the symphonic arrangements for the Motown songs, because that was the only studio big enough to accommodate an orchestra.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, we knew all about the history of United Sounds. So going in there to record, that kind of had an effect on us, you know? But we were so amateur. I mean, we were so amateur at the time. Rockfire Funk Express, we were just really getting started. And when we had that session, and that first session that we did, as a matter of fact, that track is on Jack White's record label, Third Man Records, called Rockfire Funk Express. We did that. That's when we became infectious about recording, and especially at United Sound, David especially. He just said, if he had this way, he'd live in United Sound, you know. So we became infectious about recording and going back into that studio. But we knew that we had to have a sound. We knew that we had to be a little bit better musicians than we were, you know.
Yeah.
And hey man, we just what happened was, really, Rockfire Funk Express was kind of a mixture between funk, jazz, and rock, you know, because at the time everybody was doing the fusion thing, you know.
Yeah.
It was a big old thing called fusion, which means that, you know, I mean, everybody from Miles Davis, Stanley Clark, John McLaughlin, and Mahavishnu Orchestra, I think they're the group I think that really kind of introduced that whole fusion thing into the world of rock and roll.
Kind of made it mainstream.
Yeah. And so everybody was doing fusion. So we were no different, you know. So that's, you know, we called ourselves Rock Fire Funk Express, you know, the Rock Fire, the Funk Express, the whole jazz thing with the rock thing. Well, you know, I mean, one night, my brother Dennis we went to the Cobo Hall. He went to the Cobo Hall, actually. And he was there with my mother, who was actually supposed to be going to a Motown party in another part of the annex. But they had to walk through a concert at the arena to get through the annex. And just so happened at the arena, Alice Cooper was playing. The Boa Constrictor and the Snake and the whole, you know, the whole thing he was doing that was almost, I think it was the tour he did before the Billion Dollar Babies thing. It was real early, one of his real early shows, I think, when school's out. It was one of his early hits. He was mesmerized by the performance. Like, he came home and he was all excited. And he said, man, this is the kind of music we want to play. This is what we want to do. You know, I mean, me and Dave were still into the Rockfire Funk Express thing. We wasn't so sure. Uh-huh. But, we said, okay, you know, that news wasn't met with all much enthusiasm, you know. Especially the fact that, you know, he's talking about Alice Cooper. You know, this is the guy that does all these crazy things with the snakes and all this kind of, you know, we were like, look, man, that's not, you know. And just so happens, a few months later, The Who came to town. And David happened to be at that show. And the reason that we were able to get into all these shows, by the way, was our mother. Our mother had a boyfriend who was a security guard. And he totally worked at all the venues, you know, the Olympia Stadium, Cobo Arena, the Masonic Auditorium, Ford Auditorium. These were all the places in Detroit where all the rock bands came. So we were able to see any shows we wanted to see for free because, you know, so David got in to see The Who. And he came back and said, man, yeah, he was all in. He was definitely all in. And we all decided to just explore rock and roll and to take it to that level of to get as much knowledge as we can. And how do you get that knowledge? You just go to the record shops and buy up everything you can that has that sound. And at the time, you know, records were dirt cheap, $2.99, $3.99, you know?
Yeah.
You stock up, man.
Go to school.
That's right. That's exactly what we did. And it was kind of my job to get all the records because I just happened to work an after-school job downtown. And it was a part-time thing. So on Fridays, I just go around the corner to the Greens Records or the Motor City Records and just rifle through all the stuff, man. And the gems that I was finding, it was just, I mean, it was just incredible. I mean, that's how we learned about really the music of The Who. That's how we learned about the music of Todd Rundgren. That's how we learned about the music of the Rolling Stones. I mean, everybody in Detroit had known about the Rolling Stones, but we didn't know that they had some deeper albums.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We was buying stuff like King Crimson. We was buying stuff like, of course, all the Beatles albums. And, you know, there was new bands coming out. You know, the band called Queen, of course, everybody knows about.
So your first Death single, Politicians in My Eyes, and then was it Keep on Knocking on the other side?
Yes, it was.
And that one you recorded, was that in the same studio?
Oh yeah, that was in United Sound studio. Well, that was right after when we went back. We recorded a bunch of demos of Keep on Knocking and Politicians in My Eyes. And we finally took it. We were shopping it around Detroit, and we finally took it to this producer. His name was Don Davis, and he just so happened to own United Sounds Recording Studios. And he was doing a lot of rhythm and blues with groups like the Dramatics.
Oh, nice.
Like, yeah, the Dramatics, Johnny Taylor. Mm-hmm. He did the Marilyn McCoo, Billy Davis thing, and they won the Grammy on that.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
The closest to rock and roll that he got was he was doing a lot of stuff with George Clinton, and he was doing a lot of stuff with the Parliaments and the
Funk. Yeah, not Dollars. Really rock and roll, but pretty out there.
Pretty out there, yeah.
Yeah.
And, but hey, to Don's credit, you know, a lot of people say he wasn't involved with that much rock and roll, but to his credit, he did produce one of Robin Trower's albums as well.
Oh, wow.
So, And on top of that, right around that time, Mick and the Boys had come in and they had recorded a couple of tracks at United Sounds. So that really kind of upped ante on the rock and roll level when they did a couple of tracks there. So
yeah, some, you know, serious cred.
Yeah. And he heard, it wasn't Don Davis who signed us up. It was his number one man, Brian Spears, who they had an office on in Detroit. It was about maybe a few miles away from the recording studio of United Sound, but we did the demo track at another studio, and Brian Spears heard it, and he was knocked out by it. So it took him a little while to digest the name when he asked what the name of the group was.
Uh-huh.
But he kind of thought about it and he took a chance on it. We got a call later and said, hey, you know, from the secretary, says, yeah, you know, come on in, you guys. You know, they want to sign you guys up to a year agreement. Then the most significant thing about that year agreement is that David got his wish, because we were able to practically live in United Sound for the whole next year and just record all that, all the music that you hear on the Death album for the whole world to see. That was all recorded in United Sound.
Yeah, and then there was extra stuff that didn't make it to that album, which
it didn't
become a proper album though until 2008, isn't that right?
That's very true. I mean, we always intended, even on the small demo, on the small tape that we took out of United Sounds, David wrote the name of the title on it for the whole world to see. And we'd always intended for that. We really wanted it to be about maybe 10 to 12 songs.
Uh-huh.
But at the time, you know, we didn't get a chance to really finish the whole project because, well, as the story goes, you know, Don Davis, who was shopping around all of his tapes that he made at United Sounds, and Don had connections all over. He had connections with Stax Records. He had connections with Atlantic Records, number of record labels in New York. But the one record label he did have serious clout with was Arista Records, which at the time, Clive Davis was jumping ship from Columbia to go to Arista. And when he did, he hooked up with Don. And that was the label where Don Davis won the Grammy for You Don't Have to Be a Star to Be in My Show with Marilyn McCoo and Billy Davis. So Clive Davis and Don Davis was working together. And he always had an ear for what Don was doing at United Sound. And Don let him hear one of our tapes. And Clive really liked it, according to Don Davis. He said he really liked it, but he didn't like the name.
Mm-hmm. They just kept coming up.
Yes. So oh, wow. when he sent back word to New York that he says, hey, I might be willing to work with this band if they change the name. And, you know, it's an infamous line, but I guess I could say it. You know, David, he thought about it for a minute, looked up and told Brian to tell Don Davis, go to hell. And that's kind of sent us on a trajectory of, look, Don Davis had big business with Clive Davis, and here we are, the Bad Death, and, you know, nobody wants, you know what I'm saying? So guess who got thrown off the boat?
Were you guys playing gigs regularly, or?
No, we really didn't, because we tried to play a gig. We got booked. David got us booked at the Electric Circus,
mm-hmm.
which at the time was one of the biggest rock clubs in Michigan. It was in Ann Arbor. And the guy took a chance on us and said, okay, I'll book you for one day on a Monday night. And here we are on the Monday night. I think there was about two couples there. Hmm. But the funny thing about it is they did like the music.
Okay, well. But, you
know, we just couldn't get any play because every time we said that to a promoter or to a club owner, I mean, we would call up, try to get gigs, and they would say, what's the name of the band? And we would say Death. And then some of them would think that we were pulling practical jokes on them and then hang up on us, you know.
Now you can have a band called Diarrhea Planet and play on The Tonight Show.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Definitely. Definitely. That's so true.
Yeah.
You know? It's just the way the times go, you know. And so we kind of understand that. But, you know, of course, you know, we can't help but feel a little slighted, you know, when you hear about the name of some of these bands today, you know, and it's like, what? And you guys wouldn't even play our records because you didn't want to say the name Death over the air.
Yeah. And then isn't it a little ironic that the album title in mind was For the Whole World to See, but nobody would put it out there?
Nobody wanted to put it out. Well, David, you know, that was his conviction. I mean, much to David's credit. The truth is that David believed more than anybody in the world that the Death music was great rock and roll music that the world was going to discover one day.
Yeah.
And if there's anything that we wish could be, is that he could physically be here to see his prophecy come true. Yeah. Politicians in my eyes. They're thinking less about you. They're thinking
but they up and end the place that they want to be. I'd like to bring up the fact that you yourself have three sons. Have a punk band. Three blood brothers who happen to be black, who happen to be playing in a punk band. And this was the case before they knew this same fact was true about you.
Yes, it was. That's very true.
And very true. I might blow your mind a little bit here. Your son Julian and I started a punk band one night in Texas in 2007. I was traveling with this punk kid I barely knew, hopping freight trains. Julian was also traveling around on freight trains.
We kept
running into each other in different states, unplanned. And we hung out several times. And then one night when we were in Fort Worth, I just messaged him this morning because I was like, is that you? Do you remember me? Am I getting this right? He's like, oh yeah, that was me. And he said that show was in Fort Worth. We put together a band. We had a practice, made up a short set, and went to town. And
wow.
Lo and behold, I don't know. I don't know if there's anything to do with that, but I thought that was pretty out there.
You know, it's funny, man. I mean, you think about it, what you just said, you know, my son, you know, three young black brothers, all blood brothers, playing rock and roll. You know, it's like a mirror of me, Dennis, and David. I don't know. Me and Dennis, I particularly being their dad, I like to say to people, don't ever tell me God doesn't have a sense of humor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I look at my son. But, you know, right here, this is our latest right here.
I mean, you got a new split single out.
A new split single. And what has happened is, with death, we've kind of metamorphosized everything into the whole Hackley family here, in that Julian and Urian now are taking over the guitar work for all of the death material. And we just can't wait to bring that live out on the stage. It's just going to be tremendous. The sound is just absolutely ferocious. And we just can't wait to bring that out to the public. And of course, they continue on with their band, Rough Francis. We encourage that. We're basically just one musical family now, and we hope to bring out the full production. If we don't bring out the full production, we'll bring out the maximum death, what I call it, with Julian and Uriah. And if we don't bring out that, we'll bring out the classic death, you know, mm-hmm. which would be the three piece. But either way, we've got a whole lot of stuff that we can do and that we can offer for rock and roll. And I mean, we've always been serious about the art form of rock and roll. I mean, that's the one thing about David and myself and Dennis, you know, at the band Death, we've always been very serious. I think most rock and roll musicians, especially the ones who come from Detroit, we all took that music very, very serious. I think it had to do with the churning of the industrial plants that was all around us. You know, there was always a booming and a banging and a crashing all throughout the night. Even when you're trying to sleep, you can hear just the constant beat. I think that's why all of us from Detroit, whether you with Motown or rock or anything, we always got that beat within us, you know?
Yeah. You know, I think, and you're based in Vermont still, right? Is that?
Yes.
Yeah. But you carry that Detroit with you wherever you go.
Oh, Detroit is there's two cities that I have to say that are my friends. They will always be my deepest friends, and that's Detroit, Michigan, and Burlington, Vermont. And we have just a connection between the two, and we go back and forth to the two, and we just absolutely love it. You know, we have family here that we have developed over the years, and we have family in Detroit. So it's just a wonderful thing.
Well, I did a little bit of digging into the Lamb's Bread catalog as well,
mm-hmm.
and kind of felt like maybe the Detroit sound, like kind of really playing a big role in the way you guys approached reggae.
Oh, definitely.
The components, yes. The structure.
It's definitely it. it's interesting that you think of the roots of reggae music and it's all about the bass and drum in reggae. Well, think about Motown. I mean, in Motown, the two main musicians was a cat named James Jamerson, who played the bass, and a guy named Spider Rice, who played the drums. So that was, I mean, and Berry Gordy would always say, they would ask, where does the Motown sound begin? He says, right with them two dudes right there. That's where it begins, right up from the basement. So, yeah. You know, that makes sense to us, you know, that bass and drums, you know. And it also, when we got into reggae and we learned about the cultural people of Jamaica and how much they love music, they always reference Motown, too. And we noticed that there was a real connection between the Motown sound being emulated in Jamaica as well. But that made us feel really good. It made us feel like, wow, you know, somehow or another, it wasn't like we did it on purpose, but we seemed to be on the right track here.
Yeah.
You know.
Is Lamb's Bread retired, on hiatus, or still active?
Well, kind of on a hiatus, kind of retired, kind of like we may come back and do something special.
Uh-huh.
Because but what I did do with me being involved, one of the things I did do during that time was I started a reggae festival, and it became a phenomenon in Vermont. And we just released a book called The Vermont Reggae Festival, The Power of Music. And this tells the whole story. And it also has a little skimmer of a story about our involvement from death to transition into reggae and kind of what we're back into death. So it's almost like a full circle book. But this is one thing I'm really proud of. And it just came out. And so I just want to, you know, let you listen that this is available, you know?
Yeah.
Out for it, all right?
That's great. Yeah. I love documents like that. Ruff Francis. That name was borrowed from your brother David's, the late David Hackney's, final 45. That was also the last time the trio gathered.
Yes, it was. That was David's pseudo name that he gave to himself, Ruff Francis. And my sons adopted that and took that and upon themselves. And which is one of the reasons why I'm glad that even though they're involved and they're doing the deaf stuff, and Ruff Francis continues, because it's kind of like having David and David back with us, you know, in the way we feel in the spirit, you know. So he's definitely all over this, man. He's all over this. His stamp is all over this. His spirit's all over this. And we just plan to make it do it.
I really enjoyed the songs from that 45, too.
I can see all the tears that's in your eyes, unseen by others. Now I know the hurt, babes, you're going through. There ain't nothing, babes, I wouldn't do for you.
We're gonna make it is a goosebumps. It's a goosebumps tune, man.
That was David singing, and when he first played that for me, you know, it did. It gave me goosebumps because, see, and even that right there, when you look at the title of that song, he even had that conviction there. He said, "We're gonna make it because our music's gonna make it. Because the world's gonna know about the death stuff and everything." It was all based upon that, man.
Hey, you're listening to Low Profile. I'm your host, Mark Lee Morrison, and my guest today is Bobby Hackney, vocalist and founding member of the Detroit punk trio Death. Let's get back into it. So you're looking at getting out on the road with the boys?
Definitely. We're looking at doing some dates in 24. We're exploring doing some things. And hey, we'll be at all the familiar cities, man. And it's we're just going to try to get this out to as many as want to hear this, and we're looking forward to it.
With the new single there, when did you write that one?
That was from the Death from Detroit archive.
Oh, okay.
It was 1976, man.
So that was a holdout. It was a holdover.
Yeah. That's, I'll tell you, we have a wealth of songs. Because like I said, we didn't get a chance to perform.
Yeah.
We didn't get a chance to tour, and we didn't get a chance to do a lot of appearance. So we were always sequestered either in a recording studio or in our practice room, just writing songs. And geez, I'd go to school, man, and come back with about 3 or 4 songs. Sometimes.
Just in a day.
Yeah. And David, with the, we would just stress that. We were like songwriting, just, we were, I mean, obsessed with it. And we just knew that that was our only outlet. So we have all these great songs that, and we're even working on some of them in the studio right now, you know, some of the other songs as well. So some additional songs. So, you know, there's going to be a lot to come, you know, as long as we stay along and stay vibrant and stay healthy and stay happy, man, guess what? You know, we're going to have continuous rock and roll music coming out. And that's when, you know, we've got a long way to go before we finish the Death catalog.
Are you still cranking out new material too? Are you still writing?
Yeah, I mean, we still, of course. A writer will always be a writer, you know. So I've always have inspiration for new songs and new things. But, I mean, you know, I have to admit, when I go through some of the songs in the old Death catalog, I mean, that sound that was just influenced and produced and just the sound of it, even on the tapes, there's something about that it's like, you know, you can't redo that, dude. You just gotta capture that and try your best to, you know, try your best to keep that feel, you know.
I wanted to play for the listener the track Masks from the Spiritual Mental Physical release. That came out, a little over a decade ago.
Yeah.
And see if they can catch any references in there they might be familiar with.
Was such an effect on rock and roll music. It took us a while to get over that. It took everybody a while to get over that.
Was it a response to that, maybe?
Yes, that's exactly what it was. I mean, we were kind of, you know, I mean, we were pissed off because, as most music fans were, because, I mean, here we have the biggest group in the world, and then they break up in the 70s, and now they're in court fighting legal battles to the tune to where George puts out an album based on the whole concept, you know, when he put out the Sue Me, Sue You Blues and all that kind of, all those, that music that was written, what they were going through. And so, I mean, it took, I think that was a real big hit for rock and roll, man. I mean, they broke up in the 70s, but even I remember that, you know, there was always the Beatles watch, you know, like they're getting back together, or, you know, I saw Paul and John together, and that means they're getting any little thing that the Beatles did meant that they were getting back together. And that lasted, man, that lasted right up to about 74, 75. I mean, when people started just thinking, okay, we got to move on. But it did. It took a while. And it hit everybody kind of the same way, you know? And so I think that was just one of our rock and roll ways of expressing that little anger that we had, you know. So, you know, we just called it the mask, you know. It was like, you know, these guys, man, you know, they're all wearing masks against each other right now, you know. And that was kind of a little bit of that concept, you know.
Yeah. What about the life of the band Fourth Movement? Same three dudes. Very, very much, I think, a progression of the sound that you guys, you know, it made sense. It still sounded like you've got these like erratic twists and turns in the songs that are unexpected, the like tear it down, build it back up from scratch kind of thing that you like to do on the bass, by the way. That is good shit. I really like it when that happens.
You know what? That was all intentional. I mean, we really did not want to change the name of the band Death, but we were just backed into the times just backed us into the corner to do that. And when we did that, of course, David, there again, he's at the helm, and he said, we're going to go into a real spiritual direction. And we put out a gospel album, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, and we called ourselves Fourth Movement. But that music was definitely intentional to keep the sound of Death. You know, that was definitely intentional. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, there again, we tried, it was almost the reverse. With Death, you know, I mean, it wasn't the name.
It was the song.
It's the music.
Yeah.
Always at your door, hoping you'll bless me one more. Kingdom I want to see. Tell me, Lord, when will it be? Tell me, Lord, when will it be? Tell me, Jesus, when will it be?
You talk about going full circle.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. And I think really all that rejection that we went through, of course, it affected us all. But of course, it affected David quite a bit. David just wanted to go back to Detroit and reboot the rock thing. And let's go back and be a band and try to get this, you know. But there again, like I said, at the time, you know, we were all starting families. And I was, you know, my wife, I had one kid, another one on the way, and Dennis had, you know, he was starting a family, so we couldn't, it wasn't so easy to do. And, yeah, I mean, we recorded another album with Fourth Movement. That was right before David left in 81. And we still have one more album that the whole public has never heard before.
You're just sitting on it.
Yeah, well, you know, we're kind of sitting on it. I mean, you know, if Drag City has their way, it won't be sitting on it for long, but we'll see.
Yeah. Is the tape still in good shape?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Definitely. I mean, that's the one thing. All of our tapes are definitely intact. And that was the one good thing that we did. Well, you know, that's the only thing that we really had, Marky. We didn't have the, oh, we did a show in Carnegie Hall, or we did a show at Cobo, or we didn't have that. The only thing we had was our tapes and our music. So, I mean, needless to say, we guarded them with our lives. And I think my mom, you know, that we gave her a big old suitcase full of all of our tapes before we left Detroit. And thank God for mothers, man. She kept it in a real safe place and preserved it.
Yeah. Wow. That's a good mother.
Yeah, man. Oh, yeah.
So what have you been digging on lately?
Oh, man. Man.
Anything new that you like? Or you've been digging into the oldies?
I've been digging into a lot of the old stuff, but you know what? I've met some great groups along the way.
Uh-huh.
I've met some awesome groups along the way. Of course, you know, I've always liked my guys Living Color, you know. They were kind of like another pioneers of what I feel on the scene. But you know what? I'm loving this group Solar X. Yeah, I don't know if you ever heard of Solar X, man. But these guys are like, they're like Martians, but they have this great rock and roll style. They even speak Martian.
Oh, I met them. This is from like early 70s too, right? Or
well, Solar X, they might have been around then, but I think they might have resurged. But
oh,
we met them on, we did a couple of shows with them even. And they're just pretty good guys, you know? And, you know, I have to give props out to my guy, Jello Biafra. Bobby is my son Bobby, who's the leader of Rough Francis too. I mean, you know, he's the one that's responsible for turning me into some great bands, you know. Of course, you know, when I was doing reggae, he was the one that introduced me to the Bad Brains.
And
he introduced me to Gorilla Biscuits and all these great rock and roll bands, Henry Rollins and a number of people. Well, I'm still tuning into today, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, because they really, a lot of these bands who are underground, they really have the relevant things to say, man. And they're really saying it, you know? But it's, you know, I mean, underground is just listening, but every once in a while, you know, they see through the mess and get heard. So, you know, I like the up-and-coming bands. Grooving on Kings of Leon. I really like that band. And I'm still listening to a lot of Kurt and Nirvana. And of course, you know, I love all my old Detroit bands like the MC5. And, you know, I mean, Mitch Ryder and the Detroit Wheels. I always got to get my shot of Detroit, you know, every once in a while. You know, make me feel like, give me that rock and roll feeling.
Yeah. So you're pretty, you're a grandpa. How many grandkids you got?
I got 6 of them.
Oh, wow.
And they're all totally amazing. They all love me, you know. I mean, okay, I'll admit, I'm just like the old rock and rollers. And I just want to spend time with their grandkids now, you know. They bring me so much joy in my life.
And that's on the record now.
You know it.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? Maybe one day they'll join the band too.
Well, we got a few of them who definitely have some promise that they're looking at music. So you never know. Yeah. We just let them go free, man. Let them go free and do their thing, and they all seem to gravitate to music, and they seem to you know. So we must be doing something right, you know, and bringing all this good music into their lives. And the fact that we stuck around this game long enough to be able to do even more music is such a blessing to us. And we really want to express that to all of our fans and give everybody that loves the band, the name, the concept, and the music, everything that everybody missed in 1975 when Clive Davis turned us down.
Yeah. The album New was the first time that you got back into the studio to record as Death.
That's true.
In the 21st century.
Very true. And 4 of those songs were from the Death catalog of the 70s. And the rest of them is kind of a combination of some new stuff that we did. We did that with Bobby Duncan, who at the time was doing the role of all the Davis music, of the guitar work.
Checks in as the train starts to roll in around the bend.
We're still connected closely with Bobby Duncan. We're still family. It's just that he was with the band from 2007 right up to the pandemic. And when the pandemic shut down everything, I think it gave everybody a pause and it gave everybody a chance to really look at their direction. And Bobby always wanted to do some music on his own. And we, like I said, we gave him the blessing. He gave us the blessing. And we're still going to be working together in the future. But, you know, right now, Julian and Urian have taken over the role of you know, David's role on guitar. And all I can tell you is I'm really excited because these guys are they're so anal about their uncle's sound and so, you know, almost like perfectionists. So when people come out to see Death, they're going to hear these songs just the way they're played on the record, which is to me.
Because on the record, David's playing at least twice, right?
Exactly.
The leads. And so you need 2 people to replace David.
Right. Yeah. That's exactly what you need, about 3 or 4 to replace him, really. But yeah, they do it really well. They do it really well.
And where did the band name come from?
Well, it was David's concept. And, you know, when our dad died in 1968, I think that it would have affected us all, but it affected David the most, you know. And David always was exploring these concepts about, you know, death and the afterlife and where we're going. And I'll never forget, he always related to Jim Morrison too, because he said Jim Morrison was one of the few rock and roll artists that got it, what he was talking about. Mm-hmm. Then he referenced Break On Through to the Other Side, that, you know, Jim Morrison was always talking about the same things that he was talking about. It's like, yeah, that other side, and this is the end. And, you know, so
Yeah.
You know, that really is where the concept of the name Death came from. And he said, people look at it as a bad thing. But it's not really a bad thing, man. It's like, you know, it's where we're all going. It's the ultimate journey. But, you know, of course, you know, at that time, you know, me and Dennis thought David might have been smoking a little too much. But, but you know, it turns out, you know, time, you know, it's like my brother says something in the movie. He says, how do you know a prophet? You know, it's whatever he says come true. So with us, David, you know, definitely a prophet. And we're living that rock and roll dream and that rock and roll mission. Hopefully that we can finish with the death of music.
Definitely. Well, Bobby, it's been terrific to speak with you today. And I hope I get to see you in the future.
You will, man. You will.
Reconnect with Julian, too, next time y'all are on the road.
Yeah.
Pretty dope. Great.
That would be great. No hopping trains this time, though.
I think those days are done for everybody. I don't think you can even do that anymore. And what are you talking about? I never did anything like that anyhow. Cheers.
Have a nice one.
You too.
All right. Rock and roll, baby.
Rock and roll. You've been listening to Low Profile. I'm your host, Mark Lee Morrison, and my guest today has been Bobby Hackney of the Detroit 70s punk rock trio Death. And we are a part of the Ruinous Media Podcast Network, also airing weekly on Fridays, KAOS 89.3 FM in Olympia. This episode was edited by Rose Nielsen and produced by myself. Artwork for this episode by Jack Habegger. You can find his work at jackhabegger.myportfolio.com. And Low Profile receives in-kind support from San Francisco Street Bakery, Schwartz's Deli, Old School Pizzeria, Rainy Day Records, and Schirler Easy Premium Shitty American Lager from Three Magnets Brewing Company. If you like this show, you can find an archive of all previous episodes at lowprofilepodcast.com. If you want to support the show, visit patreon.com/lowprofile. And please subscribe. Coming up later this month, we've got a bonus episode. Surprise.